Broadcasting from the campus of Salisbury University, this is WSDL Ocean City 90.7 FM. It's time now for Delmarva Today with your host, Don Rush.
This week, once again, the captains were out, around a dozen vessels in all, for the 54th annual Skipjack Races. Welcome to Delmarva Today. This is Don Rush. Where once there were hundreds that plowed the waters of the Chesapeake Bay, scooping up millions of bushels of oysters, now only a few remain working the bay while others carry tourists. Stoney Whitelock is in his 60s. His father and grandfather were both watermen. But he didn't follow his ancestors' footsteps, instead taking a job with a regular paycheck. But if there's anyone who has been a key to the revival of interest in the skipjack, it is, all agree, Captain Stoney Whitelock. His boat, the Catherine, hit a buoy a few years back and is up in dry dock, where on weekends Stoney and his friends work steadily to repair some of its aging wood. We caught up with him amongst the skipjacks in Scott's Cove Marina near Deal Island, helping to fix up the skipjack Fanny Doherty. And he remembers a time when there were plenty of skipjacks in the harbor as far as the eye could see.
I've known all these captains and all these boats all my life. When we sat to the dinner table on Sundays, that's all the conversation was, skipjacks. I could name names that's gone and 50 years gone. Fast boats and good boats and carry a lot of oysters and just carry a few. But this boat here is the City of Crisfield. I think she was built in 1949, Captain Arthur Daniels. Captain Arthur is 92 years old, and he's still the captain of this vessel.
This vessel that's still out there running?
He's still out there oystering. He oysters from November to March in the cold of the winter. And he'll be right back there next year, this year coming. First of November, he'll be letting his dredges go. And if I'm not mistaken, he's won more races than anybody that's been in the race since 1960. So
what was it like growing up? How many skipjacks were out there when you were growing up?
I would say it was 30 or 40 right in this general area, in Winona and Deal Island and Chance, probably 30 or 40. As they got old and deteriorated like that one over there, it was too expensive to rebuild them, so they just pulled them up on the mudflats when they were done with them.
So what did this marina then look like when you had all those?
It was a watermelon patch when I was a boy.
Oh, yeah? Oh, this area right here?
Captain Jack's father, Mr. Eldon Willing, he was the captain of a skipjack called Robert L. Webster, and she was the biggest skipjack that was built at that time. Mm-hmm. Built in Oriole in the early 1900s. But Captain Eldon farmed a little bit in the summertime and oystered in the wintertime. And this boat that we're standing on, Captain Delmas Benton's, and his father had it. And Delmas has the boat now, and he does a great job of maintaining this boat. Everything that we're leaning on and walking on and looking at is new last year. New mast, new boom, new deck, new logs, new rails. I believe the cabin was here, but you can see it's solid, good shape. Captain Domus really takes care of his boats.
What makes a good skipjack?
Maintenance.
Yeah, maintenance?
Pretty much they're awful hard to keep up. These two that we're looking at right here are both over 100 years old. That's unheard of for a wooden vessel. Wooden vessels don't last 100 years. But we keep repairing them and try to keep them in the best shape that we can. Under that, what we call the log. Well, water's going to get under there eventually anyway. And once water reaches that point, it just lays there and it rots. I don't care what kind of wood you use. for the exception of pressure treated. We're using a lot of pressure treated now in these boats, and it's holding up better than oak or pine or whatever we did use before.
Now you're working on a Catherine, which obviously had some serious problems. What kind of aging did you find there with the wood?
Well, all of the framing and the keelson itself was original 112 years old, and it had began to rot right up in the forward part where the mast sets. That's where you need your most strength. That's where it added the least strength. All the framing underneath was gone. Bottom was iffy, but it was rebuilt in 1954. But if you get 60 years out of a wooden boat, that's about the life of them.
So what was your father like? He was that waterman?
Yes. Yeah, my grandfather, my great-grandfather.
Yeah? What were they like?
Well, just hard-working people. That's all they did is worked hard all their life for a little bit of money, just enough to survive on. That's all this is. But it's a freedom, and they enjoy their freedom.
A lot of independence?
A lot of independence. You go out at a little before sunrise and come back sunsetting. You know, it's a long day, long, hard day. But it was worth it to them. My son still does it. I chose to go another route myself.
Yeah.
So.
Why did you choose to go another route?
Well.
Well, what point did you decide that was not it?
I got jammed up on the Western Shore. We were selling to a buyer from here. Mm-hmm. And when the market's kind of iffy, around January, it gets kind of iffy. And our buyer didn't come because of the weather. It got bad. And nobody else wouldn't buy our oysters. Mm-hmm. So what we had for that week, we wound up shoveling over, and we didn't even make expense money to go over there. And when I got back to Princess Anne, I ran into some friends, and I had done some power line construction, and they had a job opening, so I took it, and I stayed in that business for 40 years.
So that the oystering and crabbing, that just didn't make it for you? I mean, you could make a living. I mean, or was it just too tough?
Well, it was awful tough. Yeah. But I was young and tough then myself, so it the work that didn't really bother me. I could handle the work, but you know, it was good when it was good, and if you're going to stay with it, you got to go with the bad too. And I found a job, and it was a paycheck every week, and I took that.
So when you went out on a skipjack, or oystering, or crabbing, what was a typical day like? I mean, what was it?
Well, it's, if you can imagine, you're here all day trying to get your breath, because he's back here winding these dredges.
Right,
the dredges fast up there, yes. As you go through that dredge, that other one is coming. There's no break, and it's just back-breaking work. You try to get a sick of wind. You try to carry on a little conversation with the guy around you and try to make the day. Mm-hmm. And come at the end of the day, most of the time you got a day's work and for a day's pay.
So what is it? You worked up towards front of the boat for the dredging. So
yeah.
what was that like? I mean, it sounds to me like you build up a lot of muscles and a lot.
It's demanding. I mean, physically demanding.
Yeah.
It's mentally demanding because you don't know if you're going to get through the day or not, because he's steady. piling you up with those shells and oysters, and you just got to go like you're wild all day and try to get every oyster that's legal that comes out of that dredge and bring them back here, and whatever you got out here, get back here and shovel them up and try to catch that next dredge. And that's continuous. You take 15 minutes to jam a sandwich into you about lunchtime and go and have heartburn the rest of the evening and try to make it through the day.
So when you were doing this, I mean, so how long of a stretch would you do it before there was a break in the action, as it were? Or would you just do it for an hour or what?
You would do it all day.
All day? And
you would take a little break at lunch.
Uh-huh.
Now, if you were dredging with sail, some days there would be less wind than other days, of course. Like a little breeze like we got right now, you could only pull one dredge. So the guys on that side, they would switch out with you. You get a break.
Mm-hmm.
But on days where it was breezy, you still didn't get no break, because the only time you stopped the dredges was to come about and go the other direction. And the wind got a little heavy, you'd have to put some reefs in your sails to slow the boat back down to where the dredges would stay on the bottom. And if it got too light, you'd have to, what we call, shake out. You'd have to take a reef out. And so all that's done, I mean, just as fast as you can get it done so you don't miss a lick of oysters.
So now when they're steering the boat from the back,
yeah.
So how do you, and you're going by these oyster beds, and you got to, like, go down one side and you swing back around, as I understand, and come back around and do the other. How do you know where you are? I
mean, he knows where he is.
Well,
he once he hits a good lick, or he'll have somebody, when that dredge is over, he'll have somebody's hand on that dredge line. And if it's oysters, it'll give you a whole lot different feel than what shells will. It's heavier and harder and tighter. And you hold that dredge line, and she starts going like that. That dredge line in your hand starts going like that. He'll throw a buoy if he thinks you know what you're talking about. And then he'll buoy that place off like he wants it. He'll put a buoy at the end of it, at the beginning of it, and work that.
So at the end of the day, would you normally be able to then make enough money for the day, or is it
We made some good days work.
Yeah. So what's happened over the years? I mean, obviously, as I understand it, there was something, at least by the 1920s, there were about 2 million bushels of oysters, and now obviously it's below that just within recent years, within the last couple of decades, some of it's disease and so on, but what's happened to the community? I mean, as this oyster team seems to diminish.
Well, a few of us are still scratching out a living out here. You see what few boats we have. Like I told you, when I was a kid, there was 30 or 40. Now, there's only 7 working the total Chesapeake Bay. 5 or 6 of them are here every winter, because it seems to be a little bit better a spat catch down in this area than there is anywhere else. Pollution.
We're speaking with Stoney Whitelock down at Scotts Cove Marina, and we'll be back after this break. Welcome back to Delmarva Today. I'm Don Rush, and we're speaking with Stoney Whitelock. He is a captain of the skipjack, the Catherine, and we're talking about skipjacks and their history.
So tell me a little bit about the skipjack, because it seems to have been designed really for this kind of work and this kind of bay, because you got a bit of a shallow a bottom. I mean, how does that work? I mean, what how did that happen?
Well, how it happened was these were a whole lot easier and more economical. They were easier to build than, say, a two-masted schooner or a bug eye or whatever. You would have a smaller crew. It wouldn't take as many men to man them. You were working in shallow waters, and all the oysters had been depleted into deeper waters. And that's why they came up with the shallow draft to fish the sounds and, Choptank River was a great oyster bottom. We don't know what's happened there, but something has definitely happened. 70s and 80s, there was a boom, oyster boom. Everybody worked on it. On the Choptank skipjacks, and if you would get a pretty day, you would go out in the bay and look around, but mostly everybody was fed off the Choptank River. There was millions of bushels of oysters come out of that river in Cambridge boats. There was three or four, five skipjacks in Cambridge, probably 8, 10 in Tillman. There was 10 out of here that went there. A lot of skipjacks in the 70s and 80s. And then MSX struck and...
the disease, right?
Dermo, yes.
Why did the skipjacks seem to go out of...
Well, in the recent years, probably the past 10 years, they've allowed power dredging with regular workboat style box turn dead rise boats. That was so each man could make a living off of his boat in the wintertime, because hand tonguing bottom had gone. Most of these guys that had these dead rise boats, such as this one in the slip, they hand-tonged, but the rivers weren't producing, so they favored the dredge over the patent tongs, which are hydraulic. But a lot of people claim that the patent tongs dig up the bottom and the dredge would kind of cultivate the bottom. And it's proven to be, because mostly all of the power dredgers come here and work in the wintertime. And what they're doing is cleaning all the bottom. It's continuous cleaning. Shells are turning over. The dirty side is clean sides up again, dirty sides down, and it gives a good place for that spat to catch. And I myself personally, when they open that power dredging up to everybody, I thought that the whole Chesapeake Bay would be depleted in 2 years, but it fooled me.
Still growing, that's true.
Yeah, it fooled me, because it's good. It's actually good for it.
Yeah,
it's just like it's just like farming.
So now, in fact, we talked a few years ago about a pretty scary situation where you were on a, I think it was a skipjack, and it was sinking. Tell me that story.
Oh boy. Yeah, well, right under here, under that hatch, is what we call a well. And it has a centerboard in that well. It has a pin that holds it in like a bolt about that size. And that pin had come out. Of course, nobody knows it's out. And the captain said, take a look down that hatch. And this boat feels like she's got water in. And when I got down there, it was about like that in the hole.
Right underneath your knee?
Yeah, right underneath the knee. And we had one of these force pumps. I don't see any of them around, but we had a gasoline pump sitting on a cabin with a raincoat over it. covered up. We'd start it every now and then. Well, when I tried to get that started, I pulled the rope twice and the rope broke off, you know, like it does on your lawnmower or whatever. So that was the end of that deal. So we had these 5 gallon lard tins, we called them. They used to pack lard in them, I guess, but we use them for water kegs, fresh water. So we took the, two of us took the 5 gallon lard tins and started bailing, just throwing it up on deck, you know, as hard as we could go. And when I looked, as hard as we had bailed, it had gone past my knees. And I told the guy with me, I said, I'm about done here. I'm coming out of this hole because this thing ain't going to drown me in this hole. But we got into the harbor and she just settled right on the bottom. Sank right there at the dock. And then we finally figured out what had happened. Fixed her up, pumped her out, and went dredging the next day.
Is that right?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's pretty fast.
Yeah, it was fast.
How did she get it done so quickly? Just pull it out and...
Well, it was just a matter of getting the board back up in there and setting a new pin in it.
And that's it?
Yeah. But it about sunk us.
What's the worst weather you've ever seen?
Oh, boy. Storms that come up on you sometimes with a great force of wind.
Yeah.
And you either, most of the time, you try to get your little yaw boat up and put a little teeny piece of sail up, and you probably have to scud with it. We call it scud and going with it. I was thinking the other day, one of these old boats, we lost a whole family here on the island.
Oh, yeah?
On one of these old boats, yeah. If I'm not mistaken, it was 79. Even in my early days when I was a kid, I mean, we had severe winters. I've seen ice piled up on this shore as high as that tent, mountains of ice. When it would bust up and the wind would come from the northwest, it would blow everything, all the ice over here. But a lot of times, it would be froze up by Christmas. So what you made from November to Christmas, that's all you made that winter. Because you didn't get January, February, and March. You couldn't get out.
Now, you've got a boat, the Catherine. Is it next year?
That's our plan.
That's your plan?
Yeah.
Okay. How's that coming along?
Real good. Yeah. Yeah, we got probably close to another year to work. We've been up the 19th day of September. It'll be 2 years that we've been working on her. Not full-time, just part-time. And our shipwright will be back after Labor Day, and we'll get started, hit her pretty hard the rest of the winter months and through the summer next year. Mm-hmm. And we'll be ready. That's our plan, anyway. Yeah.
You optimistic you're going to keep these skipjacks alive for another 100 years?
A 100?
Maybe not.
Well, the regulations are so funny. The environment's so funny. Who's to say from year to year? Because a lot of people have a belief that if you just leave the oysters there, that they'll be so deep in 20 years that it'll be like John Smith come here. But it's folly. You got to keep working that bottom to clean that bottom. We're getting millions and millions and millions of gallons of sewer, raw sewer, from as far away as upstate New York, Cooperstown, New York. Every little town that's in between has a sewage system that dumps into Susquehanna. The Susquehanna dumps into the Chesapeake, and the Chesapeake dumps into the ocean. So here midway, we've been actually blessed because we're kind of safe. The upper part of the bay is completely ruined. Well, in fact, that's how my son got that boat, Hilda Willing. That boat was in a family for 63 years. The captain owned her for 53. He passed, and his son kept her for 10 years. Did well oystering. The last year that he dredged on opening day, he caught 10 bushel. Because of everything that come out of the Conowingo Dam, and that's one of those severe storms, they opened up more gates than they had ever opened. And it killed everything, every oyster in the upper bay. The year before that, he caught 110 bushels on opening day. So it's all done up there. We're never going to have enough oysters again to purify this dirty water that's getting dirtier all the time.
As you've seen a particular decline in some of the oystering and the decline in some of the skipjacks out, how has this community changed? I mean, it certainly is. I mean, as you said, there's a lot more boats out there when you were there growing up, very few now. What kind of impact did that
have? Well, you don't see
a lot of people moving out, or?
Oh, yeah. And we're losing our youth. They're not going to stay here and try to get out. There's no young watermen. My son's the youngest skipjack captain. He's 42. And most of these guys are in their 60s, 70s. And, of course, Captain Hart's in his 90s.
But, right, exactly.
But there's no young people getting on the water.
Yeah.
I don't know what it'll be, but... Well, we can just stand here and look. Every house in your vision is a come here. There's no locals that you can see in your vision. Make a 360. In every house that's here, people have moved here. Retired, maybe just summer homes. But it's we still have... good, hard-working waterman that's going to do it till they die, and that's just a way of life, and that's what they do.
Stoney Whitelock down at Scotts Cove Marina, where he hopes to get his own skipjack, the Catherine, ready for next year's race. This has been Delmarva Today. I'm Don Rush, and thanks for listening.
Delmarva Today is a production of Delmarva Public Radio. Don Rush is the host. Chris Rank is the executive producer and audio engineer. You can listen to this program again on our website, delmarvapublicradio.net. You can also view our program on PAC-14 television and on demand. Visit PAC-14.org for full details and schedules.